Following program is intended for mature audiences.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Let's talk football.
Let's talk football.
One constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
There's been a lot of complaints already. Bad language, smoking grass.
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
It is the holiest of holidays for this guy in the sports world. We are talking the NFL draft. It is the week of, as I said on the air this morning, a lot of people celebrate their birthdays for an entire week. I will celebrate the draft for an entire week. It is draft week, Dan.
I'm excited. I am.
You are.
Yeah.
Wow, this is one of the first times ever that we've talked about the draft and you actually have a little excitement. You got a little bulge going on.
Hey, my team has the number one pick. They have two top 10 picks. Things are, I mean, at least on paper, trending in the right direction. So there's nothing to not be excited about. What about, so I mean, obviously you're excited because you're a draft nerd, but I mean, you know, you're excited because you want to see who ends up on the Packers.
Of course. I mean, that's part of it, but yeah, the draft nerdy. I won't pay for like Pro Football Focus, and Michael will not give me his ESPN Plus account. Instead, he'll send me screenshots of all these mock drafts from like Kuiper and some of the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I'm doing, you know, I've been doing simulation stuff for free on some of these websites for, you know, like 2 months, you know, or since the season has ended. And the most recent one I did, I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to do one more because everything, you pretty much know right now with everybody's kind of in line with where the top, at least the top pick and what's going to happen, you know, at least who's going. Maybe you don't know where and what order, but you kind of know what general teams are in direction that they're going. And the last mock draft I had was the Bears taking Jaden Daniels.
I don't think that's going to happen.
No, but I just busted out laughing. Like, of course you would. Like, really? Okay, well, this simulator, whoever programmed this, is dumb.
Right, right. Like, it's a pretty foregone conclusion at this point that Caleb Williams is going number one.
Yes. I thought that was hysterical. I'm like, that would be so Bears.
Yeah, unless Cincinnati calls and they're like, hey, you want Joe Burrow? We'll trade you Joe Burrow for this pick. Like, then maybe you consider it, but.
Right.
At this point, I was looking at one today, the most recent one on NFL.com, and that one was kind of wild. Like, I've seen with the Bears at 9 taken. Sometimes a wide receiver, sometimes a defensive end, sometimes trading down. But a lot of times if they're taking DN, they're ending up with Verse from Florida State. I saw one today on NFL.com, had him trading down to 15 and getting the Alabama kid, Dallas Turner, and it had Verse going like 28. I'm like, 28? How? Like, I've seen him at 9. Like, are you kidding me? Like, how is there that big of a discrepancy? I mean, I know certain teams have certain needs and all that, but. That's crazy.
I mean, you see it every year, though. There's usually one or two guys that just inexplicably fall. For whatever reason, the team trades, somebody goes to get somebody else, then a team doesn't need this position.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
You know, 10 picks, and then all of a sudden, you're looking at the mid-20s, like, what's this guy still doing here? It's like, well, nobody needed him.
Right. So yeah, and it's funny that happens, and sometimes those end up being really good players. The teams kick themselves for passing for whatever reason. But I don't know, man. I'm really kind of conflicted at 9 for the Bears. Like, you know, a part of me really thinks the smartest thing is probably to trade down a couple spots and grab a couple more assets. But at the same time, like, if you're sitting there at 9 and you know, the Washington wide receiver falls to you and you love him. You think he is a potential, you know, franchise number one guy. you might have to take him, you know, and taking a wide receiver that high, especially if he's like the third one, seems kind of risky, right?
Well, I mean, is it risky if you're the third team to pick one, like with Marvin Harrison?
That's what I'm saying. You
know, Malik Nabers.
Yeah. Like, okay, you're not, like, the draft is telling you that this guy's the third best guy. He might still be really good. That's, I mean, he could still be a number one guy. But it's risky, you know, when maybe you could trade back and get more assets, or maybe you could take potentially the top defensive player on the board, whoever you decide that is. I don't know. I just, I'm not sure which way I'm leaning. I think I'm leaning to the trade, but it seems like a lot of the experts are like, if Odunze's there, they have to take him.
Yeah. I would think that given how many picks, or I'd say how few picks the Bears have, I would say they would be open to accumulating more.
Because they only have four, and that's counting 1 and 9.
Right. You know? Two in the first round, and then two for the last six rounds. That's crazy.
That's crazy. It's weird how it shook out that way, because they got, you know, I still think they got a second rounder from the Panthers next year. So, maybe they use something next year to get into, you know, the middle rounds of this year's, who knows, but you know, that nine, you know, depending on how this quarterback stuff shakes out, where I'm seeing a lot of mocks for like the top four or five, even five picks are quarterbacks.
Yeah.
With a bunch, two or three trades involved.
I'm on the one on NFL.com right now, and I don't think it's the same one that you have that you looked at earlier, because they're trading with the Colts at nine, at least for the Bears, and then the Colts are taking a tight end, which.
Yeah, that's the one.
Seems a little weird to me that you trade up to, I mean, is the tight end the next Antonio Gates or Travis Kelce or,
right?
Who are we talking about? Is this guy going to be that much of a game changer with the ninth pick?
Is he going to be better next year than LaPorta was for the Lions?
Right. Right.
That's who you're hoping you're getting, right?
That's what I would think when you're that high, but they don't predict what they give up for that trade, but if it's something astronomical, I'm not sure that you trade that much assets for a tight end with a ninth pick in the draft. That's just me.
Right, right. Unless you think the Jets at 10 are going to take him and you're just desperate to get him, but
right.
I don't know, man. I mean, we talked about it last time that, you know, J.J. McCarthy kind of shooting up into the top five here is...
Yeah.
It's surprising, but at the same time not, because this is what the league has become, right? I mean, it's
right.
It's so quarterback driven that if you're going to miss at four, you'd rather miss on a quarterback than okay, you take Marvin Harrison and what then? You know?
I right now at the one that I'm looking at, if the Giants follow through with this prediction and they take McCarthy, I'm saying they're just doing a repeat, rinse and repeat of the Daniel Jones situation.
Kind of feels that way, right? You know, athletic, but not a great thrower, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen McCarthy linked to the Vikings a lot, man, and I just think that if you take him, you're fourth in the division at the quarterback position for the foreseeable future. Because Caleb Williams, if you pick him number one, you feel he's going to be a star. I think a lot of people think Jordan Love is going to be a star, and Goff is a very good player. I mean, people don't like to give him credit, but guy's good. He wins.
Mm-hmm.
So to go up and get him at four, I don't know, man. That's crazy.
I don't know what order Daniels and May and McCarthy, and even throw in, you know, like Nix in there. He's kind of the outlier.
Penix.
Penix, you know, put him in there too.
Yep.
Like, I don't know how many of these guys and what order they're going to go in. You know, I've seen the Vikings trading up to jump up. I've seen them trying to get Daniels. I've seen trying to get May. They went out to dinner with Daniels, kind of like Williams did with the Bears. But no, I don't. This is kind of the first And I'm a little bit, I think I said this last year, I was not very prepared. I didn't look at a lot of stuff. I didn't look at a lot of the players. I'm a little bit more prepared. And honestly, there are a little bit bigger names this year, I feel like. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of offensive weapons, especially at quarterback, especially at receiver. You know, you got Bowers, the tight end, and then, you know, you got your standard linemen that are in there. You got a couple edge rushers and, a defensive lineman. But I feel like they're in the top 15. You're going to see a lot of names that you're well aware of. And then things from there kind of drop off, guys that are really good and who are going to add, possibly starters right out of the gate. But, you know, more names in the top half, I feel like. And honestly, it's like from the stuff I'm reading, I have no idea what's going to happen outside of the number one pick. I really don't.
No, I'm with you. Isn't it crazy how the game has been Maddenized, though? Like, if you were playing a franchise on Madden and you have, you know, the best draft picks, like, you're typically taking quarterbacks, wide receivers, running backs, corners, you know, all the cool positions. But, like, in real football, it was always like, you got to, like, build from the inside out. Like, that's how you win, right? Now, like, really, in real football now, we see all the cool positions are the ones that are getting taken first now. And everybody's like, D-tackle, guard, center, you know, middle linebacker, whatever. We can throw some good. Like, isn't it crazy how much that has changed over the last, even just the last couple of years, it feels like?
Mm-hmm. No, I'm in total agreement. Total agreement. Yeah, and unless there's that really stud left tackle that can, you know, shore you up immediately and protect your golden boy, whoever that is, under center, you know, you're going for skill position players or somebody who just absolutely wreaks havoc on defense.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's quarterback, receiver. And, like, I'm looking through this whole thing, and, you know, I've looked at this a couple of times, not too close. You know what I don't see in the first round?
What's that?
A running back.
Yeah.
They're just not that valuable right away anymore. You know,
that's
you don't.
Crazy.
You might have a guy that could have a bunch of Pro Bowl seasons and maybe make the Hall of Fame, but it's like the days of the Barry Sanderses and the Emmett Smiths and the Travis Henry, like all that, or Derrick Henry, like all those guys. I don't know that those are coming to come back. I don't know if it's cyclical. Is it going to come back around, or is this the way it is to stay for another 20 or 30 years? I don't know. I'd like to talk to people that have been in the league for a while and covering the league and see what they think of, like, prognosticate down the road and, like, how else is the game going to change? What else are you going to be focusing on? Where's the shift going to be?
Well, it kind of feels like the only way a running back is getting drafted in the first round ever again is if they're like last year with Bijan Robinson, where it's just kind of like, this dude's a freak. He can play everywhere, or like a McCaffrey, you know, where it's just like, this dude is completely different from all the other running backs. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can find an Aaron Jones in a second, third round. I mean, you can, you know.
Yeah, and I guess Saquon was taken pretty early.
Yeah,
too.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's maybe one guy in a draft class that's like head and shoulders above everybody else, and he might go in the top 10, but that's it. Like, the days of like two and three running backs getting drafted in the top 10 or 15, that's over.
Yeah. And that's kind of sad because I kind of like, you know, I like that part of the game, and it just doesn't seem like it matters too much anymore.
No. It's all about throwing the football.
Yeah, there's nothing here. 32 picks, no running back.
Yeah. So today Zach Wilson traded from the Jets to the Broncos, which, you know, I don't think it changes any of Denver's quarterback issues of the future by getting Zach Wilson. And now, of the five first-round quarterbacks drafted in 2021, the only one left on his original team is Trevor Lawrence. So,
yikes.
Hasn't worked out real well for that particular class. And, you know, this year, I mean, again, going back to the four quarterbacks at the top, like two of them are probably going to suck. One of them might be okay. And one of them could be really good. I mean, that's kind of the, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's just kind of the averages there.
Right. And now Denver's probably going to take a quarterback too, because they have a bunch of kind of like island of misfit toys at that position.
I see them linked a lot to Bo Nix, but it's like, you know, okay, but the dude's like 25. he's super old. He'd been in college forever. Like, it's just, I don't know. These guys in college that are there for like 5, even 6 years, it's like, why were you in college so long?
Right. Well, I don't know if they want to use those COVID years and want to get better, or they weren't that good and they needed to stay there.
Well, and then you're 20, you know, you're 25 and you're playing against 19-year-old kids. It's a different right. animal.
And depending on the program you're in, I mean, is a 25-year-old at Oregon going to be playing the same competition as a 25-year-old is down at like Louisiana Tech?
Right. Right.
Or, you know, Eastern Michigan or something. I don't know.
So you're still seeing a lot of defensive backfield to the Packers stuff. I did hear, you know, a couple of people locally said would definitely prefer to go get an offensive lineman. J.C. Latham from Oak Creek has been a name I've seen. I don't know if he falls that far, but. How are you feeling kind of where the Packers are going to go?
I don't love that, unless it's like an offensive tackle. But again, I don't understand why Rashid Walker did so well as he did last year. And they're immediately thinking, well, we need an offensive tackle.
Is he the seventh rounder?
Yeah, I think that sounds right.
Okay. The left tackle, right?
Yes.
Okay, right.
He stepped in for Bakhtiari, and right tackle was fine, and they switched around guards and centers and you know, did some stuff. So it's like, you can, I think, go forward there. I don't know why they're not so confident, but it seems like you would draft a tackle with the hope that he would start there and then shift some of the other guys around, and that's, you know, one thing we've seen with the Packers about how versatile their line is, and that's cool. But just to do some shuffling and, like, insert and add stability, I don't know. That doesn't give you, I don't know. For one, it's not a wow factor at all, which Green Bay does not have to do that. They're not known for that. I understand. But I don't know. You get a... Your defense was the problem last year again. You've got a new coordinator. You've got a new scheme. You've got weakness in the secondary and at linebacker. But I guess I also don't know who's, you know, like Michael and I were talking about this last week or the week before. With this switch from a 3-4 base to a 4-3, which one of those linebackers is now putting their hand in the ground?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Rashawn Gary? Is it Preston Smith? Is it Lucas Van Ness? Like, who's going to be left on the outside to rush, or who's going to have those responsibilities? Who's moving up front? So it seems like the D line has gotten a little stronger, because you're going to have some of those guys move from the linebacker position to defensive end in this. So then you're even weaker at linebacker. So that's a priority. So it's like, I don't know. I guess I'd just be more comfortable. I know you got the safety that you brought in free agency. That's good. You got Alexander at cornerback, so you got two starters there. But after that, you're kind of cobbling stuff together and just, I don't know. Offensive lineman doesn't seem great. I saw that somebody wanted him to take the Duke center, Graham Barton. To me, you can grab a starting center in the second or third round, personally. I don't think that's a first-round pick unless that is the weakest spot on your offensive line. I don't think that is one of their top needs, and it doesn't look like the mocks that I've seen, that dude's going to fall that far. You know, you got the linebacker from Michigan, Colson, I think his name is. You got Kool-Aid McKinstry, which
I'm not, you know, irrationally, as I was talking to Michael today, I'm good with Alabama defensive backs. I know McKinney you just brought in. He's an Alabama guy. But like the haha Clinton Dix thing, you got one, maybe two good years out of him. And then you shipped him off.
I was going to say, can you handle having a haha and a Kool-Aid both on the Packers?
No, no. Michael, for the last probably 2 weeks, every day has sent me a text in the draft day movie spirit that says Cooper DeJean, no matter what, the D-back out of Iowa. He just seems like a Packer.
Mm-hmm.
From everything that I read, like he would be a great fit. Move him to safety, a dude who's just going to run around and, you know, be responsible, you know, hit people hard, create chaos. He's a returner. That sounds to me like a sure winner. Other than that, some of the guys that I'm seeing in like the late teens, you know, they're not going to drop that far to 25. And Gutekunst even said today that he is way, even though they have the most picks in the draft, they're way open to accumulating more and creating as much competition. So, like, again, I am so, so ready for them to get to 25 and then not pick and trade it.
It's a draft day tradition for you.
I mean, it really is. And I'm not going to Michael's this year. His wife's going to be over in out west somewhere, I think. So he's got the three kids to manage. I think his mother-in-law is going to be there to help out. So I'm staying in. We're going to do a softball game, me and Bear. And, you know, watch, I think, the East La Follette team get murdered by Parker, and then I'll make it back for the first round, and we'll have carpet getting installed that day. So there's a lot going on, but I am so ready to get in and just wait till 25 and then go to bed pissed off.
Well, just to go back to your offensive line talk and Walker at left tackle, one of the things I heard people bringing up about why they'd like to see him replaced was because he was a seventh rounder. And, you know, you kind of brought it up with the center position, the kid from Duke, and you can get a starter in the second and third round. Like, once you're drafted, like, who gives a shit what round you were in? Like, right. I don't understand why people care about that, where they're like, oh, he was a first rounder, oh, he was a sixth rounder. It's like, whatever, man. I don't really give a shit about that. Can they play or can they not play? And if they can play, play them. You know, you see, yeah, especially in football, like you see so many late round guys end up being really good or even great players. And sometimes you're just misevaluated. Sometimes you're at a school that doesn't promote your particular talents. Like, teams miss. Sometimes it's not even until your second team. So, like, for that to be a reason to go overdraft somebody just because the year before, you know, the kid you're starting is a seventh rounder the year before, that's just stupid to me.
Bakhtiari was a fourth round pick, and he was the best tackle in football for half a dozen years.
Right.
Like, that's where you are selected, doesn't give any indication of how well you're going to progress and how well you're going to grow. It just doesn't.
For sure. All right. Anything else on the draft, or you want to move on?
Yeah. Let's cover one more before I got to get out of here.
So kind of It's been a tumultuous couple of weeks in Madison with the Badger basketball program.
Yep.
They've had mass defections, kids entering the transfer portal. You know, a couple of them were not too surprising. You know, Isaac Lindsay, I think, you know, Yaldin, you know, a little surprising because it's a Wisconsin kid, but it just didn't seem like it worked for him there. But, you know, AJ Storr, we talked about, he was going to go pro, then he went into the transfer portal. Now he's ended up at Kansas, which is just like, wow, okay. Connor Asijan has now decided he's going to end up at Nebraska, so he's going to stay in the Big Ten and go play for Fred Hoiberg. And the most shocking of all of them ends up being Chucky Hepburn last week entering the transfer portal, which I think took almost everybody I know that's a Badger fan by complete surprise. I'm not as plugged into the program as some people are. I was obviously surprised, but for some of those people to be as surprised as they were was interesting. And then to top all of that off, Greg Gard gets a contract extension. So, I mean, have you, I'm sure you're going to probably try to talk to Wargle. If you haven't, you'll probably talk to him soon. I mean, just a lot of craziness up there right now.
Yeah, we talked to him last Friday, kind of fresh off the Chucky news. And my first question to him after kind of listing off some of the guys that you did and, you know, how many had left and why and whatever. And I basically said, did you see this one coming? And his answer was, nobody did. And, you know, the basic reasoning was that, you know, he said it wasn't anything that about the program, about the coach or whatever, just fresh start, new opportunities. But people reading between the lines, not going to be a pro, probably going to go overseas. You get an opportunity to get a payday going somewhere to be a starter, and you're going to make more there than you would at Wisconsin. So I'm going to take it and strike while the iron is hot, and the only chance that I have to do it. And sorry, Badger fans, that's just the way that the system works right now.
It's nuts. It's nuts, man. Like, well, and one of the other factors with Hepburn that I had read was a guy he played with in high school, like his best friend in high school, is at, I think it's Nebraska, Omaha, and he is in the transfer portal, and he's a pretty sought after, you know, low D1, mid-major transfer. And apparently those two want to play together, and that kid had been linked to coming to Madison to play with Hepburn next year. And what I'm guessing is that they decided to become some sort of a package deal. I guarantee you they're going to end up at the same school together. Where that is, I have no clue. I don't know who the hell is paying all this money for 1 year of Chucky Hepburn. I mean, nice, solid college point guard, but it's not like he was all Big Ten.
No, but can you go to a non-Power 5 school, and with the addition of those guys, can you do something?
I don't know.
Do
but
they have the, how are they going to money to do that?
That's what I'm saying. Like, how are you going to get more money than you would get in Matt? I don't know. It's crazy, and it certainly speaks to me that, again, the NCAA has got to figure this out and get some guardrails around this, because to me, that's obvious tampering.
Right.
You're not supposed to be reaching out and talking about this kind of stuff before a kid even enters the transfer portal. Because and it's not just a Chucky Hepburn issue. This is happening all over college basketball and probably college football too. Like, all this back channel talking that's going on and offers being made under the table, it's out of control, and it's wrecking college sports.
Yeah, I talked to Ben about that too, and like, this is the first time, like, the football stuff hadn't really hit me because I understood there was some movement and it was interesting and exciting to see who's coming in. But when right now you see really the ramifications about this and what it's really about, like, it's not like an undertone or kind of like, it is blatant, in your face, money up front, buying players, going to their best chance not to win a national championship or even to get noticed, which AJ Storr did both. He's going to get some money and he's going to play at a blue blood program. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But like some of the other kids, it's now purely financially motivated.
Right.
It's not about loyalty. It's not, I was a big fan of this team growing up. It's what can I get, where, and how fast can I get it?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's messed up. And I don't blame Gard for really, the only one I blame Gard for is Asijan. Like you said, with AJ Storr, like, that guy is a basketball vagabond. He's a mercenary. He's been on seven teams in seven years. And like you say, if he wants to be a professional basketball player in the NBA, he has a better chance of achieving that playing for Bill Self at Kansas than Greg Gard at Wisconsin. Those are just the facts. Not casting aspersions. But, you know, if, and it's weird because I had heard an interview a couple of weeks ago with Gard where he was very excited and talking about how much they had been out beating on donors to get more money into their pool to pay guys, and that they had like tripled their kitty.
Right, whatever fund.
Whatever they call it. They had like tripled it over the last year. So like they were doing some serious begging and borrowing to get some money. And then to not and listen, this is where it sucks as a coach, because like Greg Gard got into this to coach basketball. He didn't get into this to have to sit there and go, all right, is Chucky Hepburn worth $100,000? That's 20% of our pool. Is he worth that for 1 year? Like, nah. Yeah. Now all of a sudden I have to think like a general manager.
And that's the thing. Not only that, you're kind of turned into a middleman.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you need to clear it with the athletic department or however that money, you know, is funded, and get permission, and then go back to the kid and say, yeah, we can do it.
And who's making that decision? Is McIntosh deciding whether or not you're paying him? Are the donors deciding whether or not you're paying him? Like, this is just,
I don't know.
It's out of control.
I don't know. Yep.
It's out of control. I don't know how they're going to fix it, man. I really don't.
It was the first time, like, talking about that with Wargle and the mass exodus and people talking about money this, and you couldn't afford him and you couldn't pay him this much. It's like it was the first time that really kind of set in and really made me sad about the state of college athletics.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the only good thing that's going to come of it is the video game coming back. You can have another 60-year season dynasty on there with the Delaware Blue Hens.
There you go. There you go.
All right, man. You got anything else before we let you go?
No, I got to get out of here. I got to go pick up my kid at Girl Scouts. But I'm excited about the draft. I'm sure you and I are going to be texting along with Michael. So I'm looking forward to it. This is my week. I'm going to try and read as much as possible, and I'll have the laptop fired up. I'm not going to be on Twitter because they can't get out of their own way by not announcing the picks before they're made on TV. It just bugs the shit out of me every year.
So dumb. The NBA does the same thing. I hate it.
That's just stupid. Because, like, I want to read about insight, and, like, I want to read about trades, and I want to do about this. Then all of a sudden, it's like you get 10 people posting such and such has picked whatever from this school. And it's like, there's still 8 minutes left on the clock on the TV. Dumb.
Very. Just
dumb.
All right, brother.
All right. I'll catch you.
See ya. All right, Goldberg's got to get out, do some family stuff. He's got some Girl Scout stuff tonight he's got to get to, so we're going to hit Brewers and Bucks without him. It's been a really nice start to the season for the Brew Crew. 14-6, 2 games up on the Cubs in the Central, tied with the Braves for the best record in the National League, second best record in baseball behind only the Cleveland Guardians, who are 16-6. It's really been an interesting start to the season for the Brewers. It's been successful, but it's been interesting. You know, the first 2 weeks of the year, Christian Yelich was really the driving force in this lineup. He's kind of at that point in his career where he's become the way Braun was the last, 3, 4, 5 years that he was with the Brewers, where when he's in the lineup, it's just so much easier for everybody else because the opposing team still has so much fear and respect for that bat. And when Yelich is not in the lineup, everybody else kind of, you can pitch him a little bit more aggressively than you probably could with Yelich in the lineup. And we've seen that. The Brewers have had, they've gone from being like the leading scoring team in baseball the first 2 weeks to having a couple of games. They got shut out. They won 1-0. They've won 2-0. So the offense has been hurting without him. There's no question about it. And, that's the thing with Yelich is this back. And, it tends to flare up on him. And listen, as somebody that the last year and a half of my college basketball career had a terrible back, it's a bitch. Because when it flares up on you, you cannot go. Like, it's not one of those injuries that you can just tough out. You just literally can't move. And it's a tough thing to get your arms around and figure out how to manage it. And he's got much better people around him than I certainly did in my stint, but backs are tough. Backs are tough. You know, I mean, everybody knows people in their lives that got bad backs and they're usually pretty miserable people at times. So, got to get him back on the mend, got to get him back in that lineup. You know, the young guys have been pretty impressive, though. You know, Churio has, I think he's got four homers. He's hitting around 250, 260. That's pretty good. That's pretty good for a 20-year-old kid. You know, he's going to have his ups and downs this year. He's not going to play every day, but he's going to be in there probably two-thirds of the time. So it's really going to be fun to watch his progress this year. Really going to be fun. You know, Sal Frelick continues to be kind of the spark plug that he was last year. Just makes things happen. Infield hits, taking extra bases, playing good defense in the outfield, although he did have a terrible throw the other night. You know, the infield is an interesting thing. Hoskins, not a great defensive first baseman, adequate. You know, got to make up for it with his power, which, you know, you'll deal with that trade-off. Ortiz has been a little, you know, he's been pretty good at third. He's had a couple of moments. He had the one game where he was throwing it all over the park. But other than that, he's been pretty good. You know, Wilson Contreras behind the dish has really improved. I mean, I think he's better now than his brother ever was when he was on the Cubs. I think his brother was severely protected in that lineup when he had guys like Bryant, Rizzo, Zobrist in their primes. You know, Contreras has really, really improved behind the plate. He's a hell of a hitter, can hit to all fields, has a little power in his bat. He's been really impressive. But Bryce Terang, man, this dude has been, to me, the unsung hero of this Brewer team offensively, well, even defensively in the first half of the season. I mean, playing gold glove level defense at second, I think he's going to win one this year if he keeps this up. His offense is much improved. He put on some weight. He looks like he's a little more locked in at the plate this year than he was last year. Last year, a lot of confusion at times, some guessing. Seems to be more dialed in this year than he was last year. And it presents an interesting position for the Brewers going forward, because you've got the Adames contract coming up at the end of the season. And if Bryce Terang and Ortiz prove that they can hit consistently, that's your middle infield for the next 5 years. You move Terang to short, put Ortiz at second, and now you use that money that you might have had to overpay to keep Adames. You use that to go out and get yourself an everyday third baseman, potentially. I know they've got Tyler Black that possibly can play there in the minor leagues. We'll see what happens there. You know, the first base position is a little bit up in the air. It's a 2-year deal with Hoskins, but he's got an out after the first year. So who knows what will happen there? But, you know, to have a little bit of money in the pocket to spend by not paying Adames, if these two young guys can prove, you know, you can play them up the middle 150 games a year and that they're going to hit, that's a huge plus going forward for the crew. Somehow this pitching staff is holding itself together right now with duct tape and glue. The two guys that have been really good for the Brewers in the starting rotation so far have been Freddie Peralta and Colin Ray. Peralta, I expected. Colin Ray, I don't know, man. Like, this dude was just out there last year, and the Brewers picked him up, and he has been one of the best pitchers on that roster since he's joined the club. It seems like he's going five or six innings every game. He's keeping you in the game. It's been a huge, huge plus for the team. DL Hall, the kid they got in the Corbin Burns trade, along with Ortiz, has been a little up and down. He's shown flashes, hasn't been able to get very deep into games, and now he's on the injured list after hurting himself fielding a bunt. Don't ever tell me that pitchers are athletes. They are not. They are kickers and punters. That is what they are. The bullpen, I mean, they've had to use a lot of guys, and it's getting worked heavy, and this Brewer team is going to, they're going to do that. They're going to be bringing guys up and down all year out of the minors. They got a lot of depth there. They're going to try their best to not burn guys out. And, you know, the Devin Williams injury obviously sucks, but, you know, him not having 3 months of wear and tear on him might be a blessing in disguise for this team come down the stretch run if he can get himself back to the point where he's been the last couple of years. Go through the standings real quick. In the American League, Baltimore 14-7, kind of right of the ship after a slow start. Yankees at 15-8. Cleveland, as I said, 16-6, leading the Central. Kansas City off to a nice start, 13-9. White Sox 3-18. They've already been shut out 7 times. Jerry Reinsdorf, sell the Bulls, sell the White Sox, go somewhere and count your money, and let these franchises move on. Texas 12-11, Seattle 11-11 at the top of the West. Houston only 7-16. It's pretty shocking for a team that's been, I don't know, what is it, 5 straight ALCS appearances, maybe 6 straight. National League, Atlanta 14-6, Phillies 14-8, Mets 12-9, all in the East. Brewers, as I said, 14-6, Cubs 13-9, 2 games back. After a nice start to the season, Pittsburgh has lost 6 in a row. They fall to 11-11. Brewers are starting a 4-game series with them tonight. And the Cardinals bringing up last 9-13. They stink, and I'm here for it. I love it. I absolutely love seeing the Cardinals in the basement of the Central Division. Out West, Dodgers only at 13-11 despite the monster payroll. And the rest of that division, San Diego, Arizona, San Francisco, all around 500. Rockies at 5-17. They stink once again. So that is kind of your up-to-date rundown on what's going on in MLB. All right, let's move to the NBA. And the Bucks, kind of in a precarious position here the last few weeks, not playing very good basketball. Giannis goes down with an injury, potentially season ending. And there's been a lot of panic in Bucks Nation. I haven't been feeling particularly good about this team myself for a while. We've documented the issues that they've had all season long. But the good thing is the playoffs, it's almost like a different sport. And for those of you that watched game one of the Bucks-Pacers series last night, you saw that. And there's levels to this stuff. And Indiana was not ready. They're a young team with a lot of playoff inexperience. The Bucks are a veteran championship caliber team with tons of playoff experience, tons of big game experience. And it showed in that first half. The Bucks got up 30. Damian Lillard had one of the most amazing shooting performances in a half of basketball I've ever seen at any level. 35 points in the first half. Just unbelievable. The second half was a little choppy. As I have told Goldberg many times when we call some of these blowouts in high school basketball, it's really hard when you get up really big early in the game to be able to maintain that intensity throughout the rest of the game. Getting up 30 before half like the Bucks did, it's tough to come out after halftime and maintain that same intensity when the other team, you don't know how they're going to react. Are they going to fold the tent and pack it in and call it a day, or are they going to try to make a run at you? And Indiana did a nice job of making a run in that third quarter. They got it all the way down to 12. But the Bucks were able to make enough plays down the stretch. You know, Bobby Portis hit some huge shots. Middleton was great in the fourth quarter. Brooke Lopez, excellent in the fourth quarter. Monster jam. Jay Crowder hit a huge three. And the Crowder, AJ Green minutes are interesting right now because they're kind of the ninth man in a nine-man rotation, 9A and 9B. And Doc has been giving AJ Green first crack at it. And last night, pretty much every time TJ McConnell went in the game, they put AJ Green in because it's about the only guy that he can stay in front of defensively. But Green had three shots in a row in the third quarter from the right corner, and he missed all three. And if he's going to play, he has to make those shots. He has to at least make one of them. Jay Crowder went in shortly thereafter, got the same shot in the same right corner, buried it, went down the floor, stripped Siakam, Bucks come down the floor, hit Beasley for a three, and take the lead back up to 20, and that basically ended the game. So that spot there is going to be interesting to see which one of those two guys can make a shot. And I think whoever makes a shot is going to be the one that's going to get the majority of those minutes. Dame not scoring in the second half, I don't make anything of it. They were basically face guarding him the entire second half. And if they're going to do that and try to play 4-on-4, I'm not sure that's a recipe to win a series for Indiana. Dame's going to get his. Bucks had a big lead. He knew other guys needed to do some stuff and get involved in the game. Him just coming down and jacking, he wasn't going to score 75 points. So somebody else needed to get into the flow. So I thought he did a nice job of not forcing that. But listen, it's one game. It's one game in a 7-game series. I fully expect Indiana to come out very, very aggressively in the first quarter of game two tomorrow night, Tuesday night. And the Bucks are going to have to absorb that punch and punch back and do the same things that they did yesterday. I thought much better job of getting back defensively than they did the first few times they played Indiana, only sending one guy to the offensive boards. Making the Pacers slow down and play a half-court game. They're the leading scoring team in the league this year. They want to run. They want to get out and get easy baskets and get dunks and high-five and feel good, and all of a sudden those transition three-pointers are a lot easier to shoot for them. But when you make them play out of the half-court, it's much more difficult for them to score, and we saw that yesterday. The one guy that is going to have a big series for them is Pascal Siakam. He is a Bucks killer. He killed them in the conference finals in 2019, along with Kawhi Leonard when they were on Toronto. The Bucks just don't have anybody to match up with him. Middleton's a little too slow. Crowder is a little too small. You know, ideally, in a perfect world, that probably is where you stick Giannis if he's healthy, and we might see that later in the series. But right now, these first couple games, I feel like that guy is going to be getting somewhere between 25 and 30 a game. It's just a matter of trying to keep some of the other guys down. Let's talk about this Giannis thing real quick. So last time we did a podcast, I had said that I would shut him down for the season. And I got some pushback on that, and I totally get it. I don't want them to shut him down for the season, but my point was, if there's any risk of further injuring that calf or that Achilles tendon, you have to shut him down. You have to think about his future with the Bucks. You have to think about his future, period. He has a big summer coming up of trying to get Greece qualified for the Olympics. I'm sure that's on his mind. It's very important to him and his brothers. They all get to play together. But it sounds like all things are going in the right direction. And if that is so, and he's cleared 100% to play with no chance of further injury other than just the natural course of action, I'm good with it, and I welcome it. You know, this talk of the Bucks being better without him after Dame's performance yesterday, it's absolute nonsense. Giannis is one of the five best players in basketball. He averages 30 points a game. You need him on the floor if you're trying to win a championship. But as far as playing him, I don't think if I were the Bucks, I don't think I would play him until Indiana wins their second game of the series. You've already given yourself a little bit of a cushion here by winning game one. If you're up 2-0 going into game three, I'd sit him. If you're down 2-1 going into game four, I'd play him. If it's 2-2 going into game five coming home, it's a good time to play him. But if you're up 3-1, sit him. I think the Bucks, after watching what I saw last night, I think they can win this series potentially without him. You don't want to have to do that. It'd be nice if you could, but the Bucks aren't sweeping Indiana. But I would hold him out as long as possible and give him as much rest as he possibly can. I mean, game two is tomorrow. Don't expect him to play. Game three is not till Friday, and game four is Sunday. So he could potentially almost have 3 full weeks off if he misses the first four games. And if the Bucks are 2-2, up 3-1 after four, I'd be ecstatic with where they'd be at. Indiana has had the Bucks number during the regular season, winning 4 out of 5. To win the series, Indiana would have to have beaten the Bucks 8 times this year. And that's just hard for me to believe that could happen. But like I said, it's only been one game. It's a long series. Rick Carlisle is one of the best coaches in basketball. He's going to make adjustments. And I expect game two to be a very, very competitive game. Just one more thing with Giannis. I kind of feel like he's getting a little bit left out of the conversations right now when we're talking about MVPs, all-stars, guys that can lead teams to championships. And, you know, it's a little bit bothersome because I know the national media never wants to talk about the Bucks or Giannis unless they absolutely have to. But, you know, I've heard some people leave him off their top five MVP ballot, which is just ludicrous to me. He had statistically the best year of his career. It's not his fault that all these guys around him looked really old and slow this year. He was great. But his playoff history right now is a little checkered. And it's crazy to say that when he's got a championship and a finals MVP and a 50-point closeout game under his belt already before the age of 30. But, you know, when he won the title in 26 or at age 26 in 2021, I think people by now would have believed that he would have had a second. Now, I said at the time it was possible, but I wasn't betting on it. I still think that the one we got might be the one we get. That might be it. But he's had some checkered playoff runs, and, you know, we go back to 19 when they lose in the conference finals to Toronto. It was his first time there. I think he was a little overwhelmed. Toronto did a great job, and the Bucks blew a 2-0 series. You know, the next year in the bubble, he gets hurt. 2021, he gets hurt. He comes back. They win the title, and, you know, you're kind of feeling on the upswing. 2022, he's awesome in the Boston series, but Middleton doesn't play, and they lose in 7. And then last year, he gets hurt. So, and now he's hurt going into this playoff. So 4 of the last 5 years, including the year they won the title, he's been hurt in the playoffs. And, you know, Joel Embiid takes a lot of shit from Sixer fans and from the national media because he's hurt a lot in the playoffs and hasn't really performed. I mean, outside of 2021 in the finals, like if that doesn't happen, Giannis is kind of in the same boat. And, you know, this is a dude that, I think a couple of years ago, people were talking about potentially being a top 15, 10 player of all time if he was able to go on a championship run here. And, you know, a couple of bad luck moments happen, and all of a sudden it looks like Jokic might be that guy that goes on a little bit of a run here with some titles. So, you know, it's interesting. It kind of pisses you off as a Bucks fan, but I get it, you know, like, you haven't been there in some crucial moments, and I'm not saying it's Giannis' fault by any means. You get hurt, but, man, got to get him back. Got to get him back before this series is over. All right, let's just run through the playoffs real quick. Out east, Boston blows out Miami in game one. Game two will be Wednesday night in Boston. Cleveland takes care of Orlando at home in game one. Game two is going on as we speak. Bucks, as we talked about, win game one, game two tomorrow night at home. And the Knicks outlast the Sixers in game one. Game two is tonight. Embiid goes down, comes back in the game, doesn't look real good. I don't know. There's always a guy, it seems. A guy, you know, in the 90s, there were multiple guys that didn't win titles because Jordan blocked them all. But, like, there always seems like there's a guy in this group of great players who, for whatever reason, it just doesn't happen. You know, with the last generation of guys, it was either, you know, Carmelo or Chris Paul. I'm wondering with this current group of, you know, Giannis, Jokic, Embiid, Luka, Embiid might be the guy that never wins a title or never even gets to the finals. Because the Sixers might win this series, but I don't know how they win two more series after this with the way Embiid looked. It just did not look good. Thunder squeaked by the Pelicans last night, take a 1-0 lead. Game two will be Wednesday. The Clippers absolutely destroyed Dallas yesterday, which was really surprising considering Kawhi Leonard didn't play as usual. And Dallas had been playing really good basketball down the stretch. Game two will be tomorrow night after the Buck game. Minnesota destroys Phoenix. Game two tomorrow night in Minnesota. I don't really know what to make of this Suns team. Classic new owner syndrome. Went all in, trading for Durant, trading for Bradley Beal to make their big three with Devin Booker. Kind of forgot that you got to have other dudes that can do stuff on the floor. It's just a poorly built roster. And maybe they win a game in this series. I don't know. I won't be shocked if the Timberwolves sweep these guys. I really won't. And lastly, Denver wins game one of the Lakers for the ninth consecutive win the Nuggets have had over the Lakers over the last two plus years, including the playoffs. Denver's the best team in basketball. They're probably going to have the MVP again in Jokic. The Lakers have a good team. They really do. When Davis and LeBron are playing well, those other guys on the roster are good players. D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, Austin Reeves. These guys are good. Unfortunately, they just can't beat the Nuggets. Well, unfortunately for them, not unfortunately for me. They can't beat Denver. LeBron already is faking an injury after game one. Anthony Davis, you never really know his condition. It's just a tough matchup for the Lakers. I don't think they're going to get swept. I do think they're going to win a game or two in this series, but I think ultimately Denver's going to prevail. But we'll see. All eight teams won game one at home. So we'll see here in game two and heading into the first set of road games in games threes and four, if home court holds serve. I don't think it will. I think we're going to see a lot of teams a lot of home teams lose game two, but it's been fun, and I'm feeling a little bit better about the Bucks. I still, you know, until Giannis is back 100% doing the things that he does, I'm not going to feel super confident. But you know, right now with where they're sitting, I'm feeling much better. I will say that Dame looked like the Dame of old, you know, at least for a half. Middleton looked like he was moving well. You know, I still think that whether or not Giannis comes back or when he comes back, I still think Indiana's going to get a couple of games in this series. They're just going to have one of those nights where they score 140 because that's just what they do. But I think I've changed. I'm feeling good about the Bucks. Feeling good about the Bucks. All right, well, that's all we got for you. Thanks for Goldberg for hopping on before Girl Scouts. No, that's a big deal in the Goldberg house. I bought some Girl Scout cookies from his daughter a couple weeks ago. Tasty as always. So, that's all we got. Enjoy the draft on Thursday night. Enjoy the Buck game tomorrow night. Enjoy the rest of the NBA playoffs. Hopefully the Brewers stay playing well. And we will see you guys down the road. Tell your friends.